and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, August 7th, 2023. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir discusses efforts to end Sudan's conflict with Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed.
On the issues related to peace in the Sudan, they say they should both cooperate seriously to support these processes in the Sudan. That will help the IGAD initiative on Sudan to be more effective.
And South Sudan's new finance minister promises reforms that will revive the country's struggling economy.
We will have to eliminate all these bad habits and open new doors of opportunities for all.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir Mayardit met with Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed in Addis Ababa today to discuss bilateral cooperation and peace mediation efforts to end the ongoing bloodshed in neighboring Sudan. South Sudan's Minister of Presidential Affairs, Barnaba Mariel Benjamin, told me that the one-day visit was initiated by Prime Minister Abiy with the ongoing Sudan conflict and its regional consequences as the main focus.
The two leaders met this morning over lunch and they discussed first how to promote peace in the region, particularly with the Sudan, that is one, and two, also with regards to cooperation between the two countries, Ethiopia and South Sudan, in all areas that target their economy, their stability, and equally the infrastructure in the area. On the economic front, they discussed the issue of a PAGAC road built from the Ethiopian border towards the oil fields. This is to enhance and open up a new road that can connect South Sudan through Ethiopia to Port of Djibouti. The Ethiopian's Prime Minister informed President Salva that design was going on and it will soon be started. On the issues related to peace in the Sudan, they say they should both cooperate seriously to support peace processes in the Sudan. That will help the IGAD initiative on Sudan to be more effective by having a strong cooperation in order the IGAD quartet that is responsible to mediate in the peace process in the Sudan becomes more meaningful and more strength.
Yes, President Kiir is, of course, part of a four-person delegation named by IGAD to try to mediate and broker peace in Sudan. Tell me about what he's doing in that regard, because the bloodshed is
still
going on.
Through our strong bilateral relations between South Sudan and Sudan, of course, President Salva is encouraging the two adversaries, that is, the SRF as well as the Sudan government, to take seriously in bringing peace to the people of Sudan by cooperating with the mediating processes of IGAD, led by President Ruto of the Republic of Kenya. So, because as you know, President Salva has more influence in terms and also knowledge with regard with the Sudan and the fact that he has got strong sort of personal knowledge and friendship of the two, I'm sure he could have a more effective persuasion process that can help IGAD process to go ahead.
Yes, many people agree on the influence and the close knowledge of President Salva Kiir has of the warring factions in Sudan. And as such, people have been expecting him to be more present, to do more, you know, to have more effect in stopping the bloodshed.
Yes, indeed. He's doing a lot. He's doing more. Of course, he didn't attend the quartet in Ethiopia. It was not because he didn't want to attend. That coincided with our Independence Day, that is of the 9th of July. So it was not possible for him to attend, but he sent a senior advisor. But that did not reduce his effort in trying to push Khartoum leaders who are now fighting to make sure that the destruction does not serve the interests of the people of Sudan, nor the interests of the people of the region as a whole, including the Republic of South Sudan. So it's a concern because of the humanitarian disasters that has created. Already now we have over 300,000 people have crossed into our borders, both returnees and refugees from Sudan. Chad has nearly similar number. Cairo, Egypt. They have already in Egypt about 5 million Sudanese are there. And at their borders, because of the crisis, they had over 400,000 people waiting to enter Egypt. Equally, Ethiopia is affected. There are people crossing into Ethiopia as well as Eritrea. So the neighboring countries are having a brunt of the suffering of the people of this war in the Sudan. So it is a concern of everybody to see that the initiative to bring peace, everybody should, and this where President Salva Kiir Mayardit and the Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed have agreed that they should exert their efforts in order to push for peace in the Sudan, which would give stability to the region, whether on humanitarian terms or security terms. So this is a very important role that President Salva is always willing to give.
That's Barnaba Mariel Benjamin, South Sudan's Minister of Presidential Affairs. He spoke with me from Juba this past hour. Sudan's state media reports that torrential rains have destroyed more than 450 homes in the country's north. State-run SUNA news agency says changing weather patterns saw Sudan's northern state buffeted with heavy rain, causing damage to at least 464 houses. It described the vast region bordering Egypt and Libya as a desert area that rarely received rain in the past, but has been witnessing devastating rains for the past 5 years. Medics and aid groups warn that Sudan's rainy season, which began in June, could spell disaster for millions more, increasing the risk of malnutrition, vector-borne diseases, and displacement across the country. The warnings come as fighting continues between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces that plunge millions into hunger. The World Health Organization says outbreaks of cholera and measles have already been reported in parts of the country that have been nearly impossible for relief missions to access. South Sudan's newly appointed finance minister says he will work to end the economic challenges facing the country. Bak Barnaba Chol says one of his top priorities will be to address the chronic delays in paying civil servant salaries. He says he will also work to eliminate nepotism and corruption. Manyang David Mayar has this report for VOA Fumbor.
At a ceremony organized to welcome newly appointed finance minister Bak Barnaba Chol, South Sudanese singer Many Men performed his popular song on South Sudan's worsening economic situation, characterized by soaring commodity prices. Addressing participants at the event in Juba today, Chol vowed to address the multitude of economic challenges facing the country.
Like the delay of salaries, nepotism in reassignment or deployment within the ministry, lack of incentives and rewards for hardworking employees, random issuance of checks and cancellation on the process, and the bribery. Some of you charge against approved financial claims, the 10% or even now 40%. We will have to eliminate all these bad habits and open new doors of opportunities for all.
President Salva Kiir appointed Chol last week to replace Dier Tong Ngor. Chol says corruption has been at the core of South Sudan's economic problems and he vowed to fight it at all costs.
I know the road to economic transformation will be too rough. I know I'll be called names, I'll be opposed, I may even be threatened to death. But I want to promise you, I will stand my ground. I'll try my best. I'll persist in pursuing a new path to economic recovery and reform. And I will do whatever that favors the majority. And people should understand that change is inevitable.
The new minister says he will introduce an economic emergency intervention plan to stabilize the value of the local currency against the dollar and other foreign currencies. Chol says he will also introduce financial reforms, including the imposition of heavy taxes on luxurious imports. Johnny Oisa, the governor of the Bank of South Sudan, says stakeholders in the financial sector should work together to tackle the country's many economic challenges.
Together, we can address the challenges ahead, such as addressing the rampant inflation, depreciation of our currency, reducing the cost of commodities in the market, which is actually the cry of everybody in the country now, by fostering an environment of collaboration, transparency, and accountability.
Joanna Cage, the Vice Chancellor of the University of Juba, points to a lack of planning as one of the primary causes of little progress in the country.
Some places have four lanes and other places has none. Is that a priority? You spread two lanes, first of all, strong roads through the country, and after that widen them. It's because of poor planning. Planning is not happening in the Ministry of Finance and Planning. We only have finance, but we don't have planning.
Akech is urging the Ministry of Finance and Planning to increase revenue collection by using a proper tax collection policy to prevent an over-reliance on oil revenues. Crude oil exports account for more than 90% of government revenues. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Hundreds of faithfuls who planned to attend a church service in the Jonglei state capital, Bor, were forced to cancel Sunday's prayers after armed youth allied with defrocked Archbishop Reverend prevented congregants from accessing the Lanbar B church. A Jonglei official says security forces were sent to the church to maintain law and order and avoid bloodshed. Deng Gai Deng has the details for VOA from Bor.
Evangelist David Jogmajak at the Lanbar B Church says hundreds of young men from Makwajpayam blocked hundreds of congregants from entering the church premises on Sunday. Majak tells VOA the armed youth were supporters of the deprocked Archbishop Ruben Akurdit.
There was no church services on Sunday because it was being interrupted by your coach youth, the Makwajpayam youth, who came to our church and invented the church compound with the arms. They were led by the chiefs and the community leaders. Those people, they just come and lock the church.
Majag is urging the national government in Juba to send forces to protect church members.
We are calling the national government to intervene and to see the security situation of our members. The state government has failed to control this situation as a church. Even some of us, we are under insecurity in the place and we are not feeling safe.
Last week, police arrested at least 27 people, including James Denghakir, the Bishop of Makwaj Diocese, who support deprocked Archbishop Ruben Akurdit for being involved in a fist fight during a church service at the same church in Bor Town. Michael Mathau Majuk, a spokesperson of the Makwaj Diocese, says the diocese administration was not part of the community that attacked the Lanbar B church.
We were not noticed about what community did to the Lanbar B church closed down, and we tried to ask how this thing happened. Is it related to what was done to Bishop, or was it something different from that? But there was no response from community.
Ruben Garangriak, acting chairperson of the Makwaj Youth Association, says Lanbar B Church is located within the territory of Makwaj community, and as such, his youth had to intervene to maintain law and order by closing the church, further claiming that the police failed to do their job.
We went to bring peace in the area of Lanbar. We are not directly part of the church. We do not want problem in our land.
Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Ilya Costa says he deployed police officers to the scene to quell the tension, but the forces were outnumbered by the number of armed youth, so they withdrew from the church.
Yeah, if we try to arrest that time, there will be another issue which will happen between the police and the youth, because they are coming with heavy guns and then they will start shooting among themselves with the police. We know law above everybody. However you do what you do, the law, you are under the law. So what has happened is still there is some procedures we are going to take it against those who did what happened to overlook the police.
Gerald Costa says young men and community chiefs are to blame for taking the law into their own hands. The standoff between Bishop Akurdit and ECS Primate Justin Badiarama began in August 2020 when Badiarama fired Akurdit from his post as Archbishop of Jonglei Internal Province and the Bishop of Bor Diocese after he established three additional dioceses of Makwach, Anyidi, and Kolnyang within Jonglei Internal Province without consulting with church officials. Akurdit filed a case in Juba's High Court challenging his dismissal. The court dismissed the case and referred it to a church tribunal for settlement. In June, Akurdit wrote an apology to Archbishop Badi seeking reconciliation and an end to the crisis. But Badi said he could not proceed with the reinstatement process, saying Akurdit refused to be reinstated as retired Archbishop. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we discover how a South Sudanese-owned cafe in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, has transformed into a vibrant cultural hub for compatriots living in the city. Stay tuned for that story, which is coming up after this break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. As the world commemorates World Breast Freedom, or rather World Breastfeeding Week, some South Sudanese mothers say it is not easy to feed their babies exclusively on breast milk as recommended by doctors. Some mothers say many South Sudanese offices don't have designated places for breastfeeding. Viola Elias has the details for VOA from Juba.
Rita Dimitri, a senior nutritionist at the National Health Ministry, says breastfeeding should start immediately after birth and mothers should feed their babies breast milk exclusively for at least 6 months as it boosts HIV immunity.
And it also helps keep your baby healthy, protect against allergies, sickness, obesity, and protect against diseases. And it is easily digested. There is no constipation, no diarrhea, no respiratory tract infection.
Yangi Justin, a mother of two, says some working mothers finds it hard to adhere to those recommendations to exclusively breastfeed for 6 months because only a few offices across the country provide special rooms to allow women to breastfeed their newborns.
During my first job with my first son, it was very challenging even because the from home to the place of work is very far. If I leave the child at home, the baby was still under 6 months and I was exclusively breastfeeding. And in the office, there was no place where this child, I can keep my child and then I go to the office and then come and breastfeed.
Breastfeeding mom Viola Santo says, due to economic hardship facing South Sudanese, many mothers do not have enough food to eat to help their bodies produce enough nutritious milk for the baby.
Most of the families are having just one meal per day. That affects the mother. She will not be producing enough milk for the baby. She happens to produce the milk, it will not contain all the supplements that are needed for the child.
Santo urges the health ministry and non-governmental organizations to provide breastfeeding mothers with supplements and vitamins to enable their bodies to produce healthy breast milk. Yangi calls on NGOs and the national government to ensure that breastfeeding areas are made mandatory in all offices to allow mothers to continue breastfeeding after they return to work from maternity leave.
I wish that every workplace make a provision whereby mothers are allowed to bring in their children to be close to them while they are doing their work, can easily just walk and go and breastfeed and then come back.
Dimitri says some offices do not allow breastfeeding mothers to bring their babies to work, claiming the babies may interfere with their responsibilities. She says the health ministry will soon provide a breastfeeding space to serve as an example to other offices.
For this celebration this year, the Ministry of Health has provided a space, a breastfeeding corner in the Ministry of Health that will be launched this week by the Honorable Minister of Health and the Undersecretary.
World Breastfeeding Week is observed the first week of August every year. This year's theme, Enabling Breastfeeding, Making a Difference for Working Parents. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The Nomad Corner, a cafe owned by the renowned South Sudanese photographer Emmanuel Jambo, has become a popular space to showcase art and culture in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. South Sudanese artists in Kenya say they're inspired by Jambo's achievements. Lucy Pony has more for VOA from Nairobi.
45-year-old Emmanuel Jambo rose to fame when he took President William Ruto's official presidential portrait in September last year and remained the president's official photographer during his campaign. Jambo was also former President Uhuru Kenyatta's official photographer and snapped many photographs of world leaders, including former U.S. President Barack Obama and South Sudanese President Salva Kiir. Aside from being a professional photographer and cinematographer, he is the owner of the Nomad Corner in Nairobi, a popular spot for South Sudanese and Kenyans alike, where artists showcase their work.
Nomad Corner, yeah. It's just an African fusion of food, mostly Sudanese food, like, you know, salataswad and ful and falafel. And it's just a nomadic, bohemian feel to the cafe. And of course, we serve, you know, coffee and Sudanese tea and hibiscus, karkade, and a bunch of Sudanese stuff, but a bunch of other African cuisines too. The other space, we probably just gonna make like exhibitions, like a gallery. So I will host exhibitions, whether it's mine or other artists from around the region. Yeah.
Jambo says juggling his work in the cafe and the studio is hectic, but he has a great team working with him to achieve his goals. In the midst of all, he says he enjoys mentoring upcoming artists.
Try to be unique and different, and that's how you shine, you know. And then you have to just work hard. You have to put on the work. Like, you have to put on the work to get somewhere. There's nothing that come easy. You have to put a lot of sacrifice, a lot of work. You see somebody that made it in life, they've been grinding, they've been sacrificing for a long time.
Jambo encourages South Sudanese living in Kenya to network and build relationships so that they can blend in the Kenyan spaces. Manasseh Mathiang, a South Sudanese singer and human rights defender, says he is a regular at the Nomad Corner.
It's a good space that South Sudanese who are living in Kenya can come and get inspired, can come and be creative in the space. And I also happen to see that it's not only South Sudanese that are getting inspired and blessed by the Nomad Cafe. Whenever I'm there, I see people from all walks of life enjoying the space and by the unique themes in the menu and the unique feel when you come to the space.
Lujang Dinyangos, a singer and songwriter, another regular at the Nomad Corner, says he performed acoustic music at the venue once.
I think I was the first person to do an acoustic set at the place. So it was very calm and, yeah, brought together, you know, being to just, you know, enjoy an evening of calm acoustic music. So it was really cool.
Jambo studied photography in the southern U.S. city of Atlanta, Georgia, then relocated to Kenya in 2007 as a photographer. He said he met Uhuru Kenyatta, then a minister, at a wedding of his brother, which is how he became the official photographer of former President Uhuru and the then Vice President William Ruto. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
And that's all we have for you this Monday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with Corby and the song Jamila. Oh, hey. We have been listening to Ras Corby and the song Jamila. I'm your host, Nabil Biadro in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Carl, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States promotes religious liberty abroad in three related ways. It exposes, counters, and prevents, explained Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom Rashad Hussein in recent congressional testimony.
First, we seek to shape a foreign policy that protects U.S. interests and security by engaging civil society and faith communities and addressing laws and policies that impact religious freedom around the world.
The Office of International Religious Freedom at the State Department often works on individual cases of repression with great success, noted Ambassador Hussein.
We welcome the release of Shamil Khakhanov, an ailing Jehovah's Witness wrongfully imprisoned in Tajikistan. And we have been deeply involved in working to address the Ortega Murillo regime's increasing repression of Christians and churches in Nicaragua.
Indeed, on February 9th, the United States welcomed 222 individuals who had been imprisoned by the government of Nicaragua for exercising their human rights and endured lengthy, unjust detentions. The annual International Religious Freedom Report casts a light on persecution around the world. These are globally recognized as a gold standard on reporting on religious freedom, said Ambassador Hussein.
If anyone in the world ever wonders whether the religious persecution of any group in any part of the world escapes our attention, the reports are our answer. The country-by-country reports go through the religious freedom conditions in every country in the world in a very detailed manner.
And finally, the Office of International Religious Freedom provides information and expertise on the status of international religious freedom to the Secretary of State as he determines which countries meet the threshold to be designated as countries of particular concern. The United States remains uniquely dedicated to religious freedom as it was founded by individuals fleeing religious persecution themselves, noted Ambassador Hussein.
Our founders felt so strongly about this fundamental right that they enshrined it in the First Amendment in our Constitution's Bill of Rights. And we are a country of immigrants.
In many ways, we are representatives of the rest of the world, gathered right here in the United States, declared Ambassador Hussein. We are motivated by the unshakable commitment to the idea that saving even one person or even improving one life is well worth our effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.